Good.
Okay, let me get this off. Abadigani, everyone. This is Professor Almond Rahm, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies Department, and long, also a former city councilman for the city of Compton, Compton College School Board, and Compton College Board of Trustees, along with my co-host, longtime educator and administrator in the Compton Unified School District and Linwood Unified, where he was the first head Black coach, not just coaching them in football, but coaching them in life. He drew one of the most historical mules at Centennial High School of Black and Brown people working together, and that's Brother Joe Hembrick, along with Mashinda, who's straight out of living in Louisiana right now, working with our people, working with young people, and working with the community. And the good doctor, who's a universal in thought, practice, and activism, along with Rashiki, who sponsored our platform. And he will be on this Wednesday with the Community Education Network. Tonight, we have a very, very special guest. And I'm so happy that he found the time to be on the show with us. And I deeply respect this, his activism. This is Pastor William D. Smart, Jr. Reverend William D. Smart is the president and CEO of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, SCLC, of Southern California. That's the organization Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy thought. I started that was very helpful in organizing one of the strongest religious movements in the 20th century called the Civil Rights Movement that was fueled by the church and the Christian Southern Christian Leadership Conference. He is also co-pastor of the Christ Liberation Ministry, which he said that's free number. They free, they liberated ministries in Los Angeles, where his wife served as senior pastor. He recently served as director of external training and outreach at the Los Angeles Alliance for the New Economy, a nationally recognized nonprofit organization where he worked for almost 10 years. Reverend Smart has pastored CME congregations in Birmingham, Alabama, North Carolina, Forest City, Arkansas, Jackson, Tennessee, Norfolk, Virginia, and Los Angeles, California. In August of 2002 to the present, he and his wife founded and pastored an independent, non-denominational congregation, Christ Liberation Ministry. Reverend Smart has served as an advocate and disciple of Dr. Martin Luther King throughout his life. He has participated and worked with various social justice organizations and movements and worked on behalf of the African Americans and all people who have been oppressed in some capacity. He started working as faith-based outreach coordinator with Bill Clinton gubernatorial campaign in 1984, and subsequently worked on Clinton's 1992 and 1996 president's campaign. He also served as a clergy outreach coordinator for the Democratic National Committee during the 2000-2004 presidential campaign. He recently served as the National Director of African American Clergy Outreach with Hillary Clinton for president. Reverend Smart worked as an adjunct professor of world religion Bible studies at Lane University in Jackson, where he also served as interim vice president. He was president of the NAACP in Jackson, a board member of the SCLC in Birmingham, president of the Forest City Ministerial Alliance and State Director of Economic Development for the NAACP in Tennessee. He served as co-chair of the Black and Brown Unity Commission, a board member of the Community Call to Action in Los Angeles, and currently serves on the National Advisory Board member of the American Values Network and the National MasterCard Community Outreach. Reverend Smart received his BS from Miles College in Birmingham, Alabama, and a Master's of Divinity from Duke University. He lived with his wife, Reverend Themabecala Crystal, and Coleman Smart, and three children, Gregory, Jeremiah, Karama, Nia, Katura, and Jared in Los Angeles. And not only that, he's a very personal and close friend, person that I admire, and I've had the pleasure to work with on a number of projects. Where he's an active member and our board member for the Black Community Clergy and Labor Organization that we call BCCLA. And his activism is broad. He's worked in the labor to get jobs for people. He stood up for the Latinos. He stood up for oppressed people. And he's a rare minister that don't just stay behind the pulpit asking for money. He goes out and works for the best interests of our people. And he's a longtime friend, a person that I admire for his work. So without further ado, we're gonna hear from my friend and my conscious minister, Reverend Smart.
Thank you so much, Brother Amin-Ra. It is very a pleasure to be here with you and my other brothers that are here. It's just good to be here and to talk to you. So I'm ready.
Okay, good.
Thank you for that very kind introduction.
All right. Did you want to start off talking about LA and the racism there and start off talking about the other works you've been participating in? With District 8, arguing over the Coliseum and all of that, all the things you involved in.
Okay. Well, as we know, over the last three weeks now, we have had a ruckus here in Los Angeles because it was displayed the white supremacy of some of our council members. And so one of them has resigned. And the other two refused to resign, particularly one named Kevin De Leon that many of us know. He has just gone on a tour now and said that he has to learn from this experience, but he will not give up the spot. So we're fighting because we believe that justice needs to be served. And before you can get to healing, you have to, you know, you have to atone, and his way of atoning is to resign right now. And I've been out there several times with Black Lives Matter, who has set up a tent in front of his house asking for him to resign. I've been at rallies. We were going to have a big rally tomorrow, but it's been canceled. And then I've been in meetings with the elected officials and others, really stressing and pressing them for him to force him to resign. They're saying that they've done all that they can. But, you know, this is the meeting that took place with Ron Herrera, Nori Martinez, Kevin De Leon, and Gil Sadia. It was just evidence that they had an agenda that was contrary to Black people, African people, because they, they said, they were saying how they have to limit it, they have to attenuate our growth in the city council and parts of the city. It just went on, and it just did not affect us. It affected some Native Americans, Armenians, and Jewish people. And so it was just a far-reaching discussion. And several times when I've been before the city council about this, I said, you know, these discussions are going on all the time. And we're always the ones whose heads are on the chopping block. But it's important that we make a point here now that we're not going to take this anymore. We're not. And so that's the fight that you're seeing. And even now, the fight that is going on, I've just left the meeting. I couldn't get back home because we stayed longer in the meeting, and I'm down at City Hall. And so I had to just find a place where I could sit down and talk to you, Dr. Rob, because it's just important that we begin to really liberate ourselves in such a way in our people that there are a lot of things at stake now here in LA, and we're going to make sure that we get a righteous divide, amount of things that are going on so we can have services that are in our communities in a real positive way. Throughout my journey in LA, I have worked on a lot of issues. I've worked on issues of, you know, as president and CEO of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, one of the most important issues that we've built is we've always tried to build coalitions. Building a coalition, that's something that Dr. Martin Luther King did, is build coalitions. And so we have built coalitions around the commemoration of the March on Washington, because we always deem that this is important. During the March on Washington, we were fighting for jobs, and we were fighting for the right to vote and entering into the mainstream of life, almost, that we were inhibited from getting in. And so it's always been a fight. And right now, one of the other things SCLC really does is we really promote voting. And so right now in LA, as you know, around the country, really, that the next 9 days now, we'll have a major election. And what discourages me sometimes is the percentage of African Americans that do not vote. But we always try to encourage them to do that because it's important. You know, I always call it the King Matrix. And that is, he first fought for people to have a right to vote. And then we fought for people to vote. Once they had the right, we fought getting them to the polls as something to vote. Then once you vote, you know, you have to select the proper policies to make sure there are policies that are empowering to Black folks. And then from there, you know, you hold people accountable. Those are four parts of the matrix of making sure that our lives get better in America. So it starts with voting. And so right now we're in that season, Dr. Ra, of just making sure that people are voting and go to the polls, they understand. And so that's where we are. I'd like to stop and just entertain questions or however you deem, Dr. Ra.
Yeah, but could you go over the challenges that SCLC are they involved in the struggle against voter suppression, voter intimidation?
We've worked with the other civil rights organizations to put through legislation we work to be advocates on those issues when the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act for America, all of those, we were advocates for that. But as you know, they both got stopped in the U.S. Senate. We're hoping that, I don't know, that the Senate might look different for us after next week. But, you know, the Dr. Raw, they're saying that, nah, you know, we're going to lose seats. Well, anyway, you know, we're fighting. We're involved in different things around this country. Even our local chapter has been, we've been writing letters in the state of Georgia, in the state of North Carolina on behalf. What we do is we write letters into communities that that are disproportionately don't vote, or they're individuals that stay away from the polls. We tend to write to them and encourage them and tell them where their voting place is and how they can find out and different things like that, just to encourage them and to vote, you know. And so we do that. And now we've been on the phone here. We've been raising, you know, I'm just as a role as Pastor Smart, raising money for our candidate here. Yeah, but that 2 years ago, we assembled a group of pastors who were ready to go to any place that on election day there would be any type of voter physical suppression. We were going to go out there, but it never happened. And we were in here in our jurisdiction in California, but we are happy of that. So it's twofold. Number one, fighting to bring forth the attempt to, inhibit our votes. Yes, it's frontline. We are, in that regard, we've been frontline soldiers attempting, but we never encountered any, but we've been ready. Some of the threats of changing of polling places, I've been involved with the county to make sure that everyone was aware of their polling places that have been changed. But right now in our state, it's so easy to vote. There's no excuses when, because you can take your ballot, drop it in the mail. You have days up until the election to vote, and then on election day. So there's no reason why people cannot.
Can't hear you, Reverend Smart. We can't hear you.
Question of our vote is important. The something happened. I froze, I think.
Yeah, you keep going in and out. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Measure A, giving the county supervisors the power to get rid of an elective share, and also the struggle in District 8 and 9 about what district the Coliseum and the sports arena and those economic ventures are going to be in. Many people online don't know that there's a struggle in the community. And the status of a Mark Gregory Thomas case.
Okay, so the the county supervisors having the right to fire the sheriff.
You keep going in and out.
We just think that's important because we're in a situation where we're very negligent and. How's this? Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in this room. I guess it's anyway. So let me be quick so it doesn't go out. So I'm in favor of that. I'm in favor of that because the supervisors need the power to fire a sheriff like we have right now. Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, a little.
You know,
we missed some of your commentary because you're in and out. You know,
I'm sorry. I guess this place, the wiring and everything. Okay. I just said supervisors need the right to fire the sheriff. Especially when we have a sheriff doing what we're doing, that this sheriff is doing. Okay, they have a right to do that. We want to give them the right to do that. That's important. So there's accountability. He's not accountable to anybody but himself. So yes, I'm in favor. We're in favor of that. William Smart is. I just want to say William Smart is. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Dr. Raw, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Mark Ridley Thomas' situation is that he is, I can't speak about the indictment. I can only speak of the way that the city council treated him and the, what we did. We responded to the situation by taking the city council to court for two reasons. Number one, we didn't think that the court had, that the city council could fire him like that. The judge ruled against us on that. How the other thing is, we said that his replacement at that time, Herb Weston, was illegal because he had already, his tenure as a city council had been up. The courts agreed with us with that one. And so he ended up, Weston ended up resigning, and we got, and then Heather Hunt took over that. When you have the 8th district, the 9th and the 8th district, they were talking about around the arena, and we felt that it was really important that that asset go in the 9th. It was in the 9th. It should stay in the 9th under Councilman Curran Price. And that's what happened. Now, with this call going forth from the three council and the labor leader, we don't know what's going to happen now. But one of the things is, we're going to fight for an equitable reapportionment process so that it can be, you know, everyone can win and not one group targeted against the other. And so that's why. So right now, the 8th district, I mean, not the 8th lost. I mean, they didn't have the Coliseum. The 9th has it, and it stayed in the 9th at this reapportionment. And I think that's briefly answering everything you had, because I don't want my time to go out.
Yeah, good. But also, the issue of LA City Council, they were also saying that the blacks think they are strong politically, but they're not that strong, something like that. But getting back to, let me see if there's any questions. I'm going to start with Sister Linda Shorter, who's in Florida, and she's a longtime activist here in the community. She's worked with a number of organizations here, and she's a part of our network. Linda, do you have any questions?
Oh, no, I don't have any questions at this time, because I'm listening, I'm learning, I'm loving this. Okay. And I just want to mention, because I was a part of BAPAC, which is the Black American Political Association of California. And Reverend, you're probably familiar with the organization, are you?
I did a lot of invocations at your events, and I've spoken at some of them over the years. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, yes, and I love that organization, but I'm just trying to get reacclimated with LA, because what you all have going on, and I just heard what you're doing, I'm just like, I'm more than impressed. So I have to keep listening and learning, and any way I can help, even though I'm here in Florida, I can still do something. So please keep telling us more about what you're doing, please.
Okay.
Yeah, we're going to go with Sister Make It Happen. Dr. Shabazz, you have any questions?
Greetings, everyone. Hotep family. Peace to all. Well, it's a heated and passionate conversation going on, and I came on towards the tail end. So I, too, am going to hear more and learn more before I have any questions for the pastor. So thank you.
You were over in the Leimert Park area, ain't you? Working with the people over there.
The Black Women for Wellness?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Definitely. Well, I'm very familiar with that organization. I work closely with them also.
Absolutely. Very active organization out in the community, doing a lot of work, creating different missions and different action committee groups, and really, really busy. You know, so I'm proud of what's happening over there. But again, I'm going to listen more and learn more of what's happening with the pastor, and before I have questions.
All right, Brother Mashinda, who's in, I think, Louisiana, right? Mashinda.
That is, yeah, that's correct. No, I don't have any questions. I'm just listening as well. I just thank you for presenting tonight, Brother Smart. You know, we have some heated elections going on this way where I'm at, trying to put in the first black mayor in the city where I'm at. This brother's running. It's a lot of voter turnout. It's like a lot going on. But I appreciate you, your work. And I'm, like I said, I'm going to stand by and listen for right now.
What city is that in Louisiana?
I'm about 50 miles north of Louisiana, north of New Orleans.
What's the name of the city mentioned?
Bogalusa, Louisiana, the home of the Deacons of the Peace and Justice.
All right.
Well,
you're still breaking up. I don't know why.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Now we hear you. Okay, brother, historian Joe, and Rick. Are you there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm here. Mm-hmm. No, I don't have any questions on it.
Okay, brother Rasha Key?
Not at the moment, just listening. Very right, interesting.
Brother Smart, I have a couple of issues that I'd like to ask you to comment on.
Professor Rock,
yeah.
You didn't ask Brother Doctor.
Yes, I did. Oh, I'm sorry. But yeah, he said he didn't have it. Brother Doctor, you have anything to say?
No, not right now.
Okay, I thought it said it did. The issues of voting with voter suppression and things. A lot of blacks got out to vote in 2020. They turned the Georgia senators took both seats. They helped Biden get the presidency. In 2018, they helped the Democrats get the control of the Congress. So a lot of black people voted. Even Biden said he wouldn't be president if it wasn't for the black vote. And right. He said, I won't forget that. So we do have a lot of black people that vote. My concern is the Democratic Party, once we get them in office, when we get them in office, they don't seem to be as aggressive as the Republicans are. There's no way Trump shouldn't have been indicted after right. January 6th. And all this stuff waiting until after the election, I got to get an ironclad case, is not the way we are treated. And they keep saying nobody is above the law. Second, they don't seem to, even if it's not even Trump, people won't even respect subpoenas. If we didn't show up for a subpoena, we'd still be trying to get bail money. I want you to respond to when we go to try to get more black people to vote than that vote, who say the Democrats are too soft. Even Reverend Warnock in Georgia, they asked him, are you going to support Biden if he run again? But they first asked Herschel Walker, are you going to support Trump? Herschel Walker said, yeah, he's my friend, and he's going to make America great again. Warnick said, well, I'm just concentrating on Georgia right now. And he could have said, well, I'll support the Democratic nominee. Mm-hmm. it seems as if there's some intimidation,
yeah,
and aggressiveness by the Republicans who campaign year-round. And the Democrats don't come until there's an election. Could you respond to that criticism?
Well, I thought you were going to go another way on that, but you know, first of all, my credentials are deeply rooted in the Democratic Party. I used to be, as you read in my bio, I used to be director of voter and African-American clergy for the Democratic Party, and I would organize or in certain places go in and organize preachers to support different Democratic leaders. That was just part of what I did. But I have felt that the Democrats have been weak. I felt there have been issues had a Republican held that issue the same way, they would be much more aggressive. I think we allow ourselves to be attenuated on issues a lot. Sometimes it looks like we just want to keep everyone happy until we get elected. That's the predicament that Black elected officials find themselves in, is a lot of times they don't want to alienate a base. You know, they have the Black base, but they don't want to alienate this white base that they most of the time is going to be supportive of them. We think anyway. And so they tend to be real soft on issues. And they tend, you know, there's no excuse that Trump has not been indicted. I don't know why. He should have been. You know, we all can say if it'd been a Black man, he would have been in jail by now. But, you know, Trump just went ahead and he just did not follow the law, didn't care about the law. But here's the thing. He has such a powerful base that a lot of those Republicans have felt that they have had to go along with it because it represents their base. You see what I'm saying? You know, the minority, Kevin, who is the minority leader of the House, and all of them. Remember, at first he was really very aggressive, but then he turned right around, and they allowed him to break the law. They don't care because he has this white evangelical white supremacy base that is coming out and going to support him. What we have to do, I think, is we have to build that old our base and make sure that we're going to come, we're going to vote as much as possible on the issues, especially the ones that affect us. Now, let me tell you that if we continue the way we're going, we're not going to have any opportunity to really build policy that affects African Americans, the poor, the disadvantaged, and the marginalized for about 100 years, because the court is going in and has moved in a certain direction. And 10 days from now, we don't know what will happen. See, so I tell my people this. I say, look, we want to vote for the people that is closely akin to what we believe in. And not, you know, if that's Republican, you vote Republican. But in reality, we're never going to get everything we need in America. We're never going to get it all. But who will become close to giving or voting or impacting or developing the public policy that aligns with our values in more ways, you know? And still with me, that's Democrat, as weak as they are sometimes, not aggressive sometimes, still, that's the people, that's the movement.
I agree with you.
Even though it's not party, it's just movement. You know, that's the, Biden. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay.
I agree with you, but the issue is not voting for Democrat. I'm going to vote straight Democrat no matter what, because that's just gives us better space to continue to struggle, because we ain't going to have no space if the mega party win. But they won't even call it the mega party. Like you said, the regular Republicans then converted over to a mega agenda. So why keep calling it the Republican Party? Call it what it is. It's a mega party. It's Trump's party. Because they're intimidated. He's nominating the people to be run for office. And they're not of the Republican Party. They don't have no juice. Second, the cases that Trump faced was brought by the major cases that's getting traction was brought by Black women in Georgia. And in New York. And then the national government comes in and says, wait till after the election to continue, except for New York, they're moving forward. But the point is, but they're going after the Trump organization. My point is, I'm not dealing with the Democratic Party. That's our party for right now. I'm dealing with once they get in office. Attorney General, who's letting voter oppression and intimidation exist in Arizona, in Florida, where people are showing up with guns in Texas. And they won't even send federal troops down there. They say they can't, law enforcement ain't supposed to be there to intimidate. But they should have agencies, unless they're on official business. They should make it official business that they send troops down there to watch them. We're watching people vote. I don't understand the lack of aggressiveness. And I know that you are aggressive. And I'm not speaking of criticizing that. But I'm just dealing with when we go and try to get young people to vote, they want to see action.
Yes, they do.
They want to see something they can mobilize by. You understand? And what it's just difficult to galvanize.
It's difficult to galvanize, but we have to look at how our lives, you know, I was on a call the other day in North Carolina. I told some people, how would your lives look if you woke up November 9th and we lost, you know, the Republicans are back in charge of the Congress? How would you look? And they said, you know, it would be nothing would ever get accomplished that we need for our vital sustenance every day. And I just said, well, that's what we have to think about. It's not going to be perfect, but I, like you said, it's a movement and we have to, you know, we have to explain. One, there are two things that are working that are working on our benefit. One of them is that people have been really motivated for that we have a Black woman, Judge Ketanji, in there now. And there are just a lot of Black women who are really campaigning their butts off because they feel that was just, you know, you look at one thing and that's that one thing. And then the other thing is, I didn't know that the way that the abortion issue is really, really thriving in certain communities, whites and Blacks and everything. And so these are some of those, they used to call those the issues that could, you know, make a difference. And those are some of the issues that some African Americans are responding to. It's the worst time to have an election with the way the economy is. Worst time. And, you know, we could, the economy is bad based on a war and based on what the gasoline prices are doing, and that affects us all. And I really think we're going to wake up on November 9th, and it's not going to be the way we thought it was going to be, because if that's the case, gasoline, in 2000, well, it was 1999, I told at the Vice President Gore, I said, man, if this gas price doesn't go down, I said, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
And I said, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Why? He said, I know what you're saying. People respond to the price of gasoline. It's one of those issues that you see in your pocketbook. It's just one of those wedge issues that is going to happen, is going to affect us in a real way. I hope not, but we just have to, Dr. Ra, we have to get out to vote more than ever before, because there's going to be a lot of things affecting us. Yeah. A lot of things.
Yeah. When major corporations get major tax breaks that Trump affecting
gave, us then, if we don't.
And then a Biden comes back and retax them for just 15% of their earnings and make them pay. They get mad, so they up the prices. All the major corporations that control food and gas are inflating their prices. Now Biden's coming out 8 days before the election talking about he's going to tax their profit. And it's just like Karen Bass. I love Karen Bass. I support her. I put her on my Facebook all the time, urging people to vote. But now she's just not calling this man a lie. She should have been calling him a lie from the beginning. Ain't no such thing as solving the homeless problem. You got to manage it. You can't solve that, because it's a universal problem. It's not just an American problem, and homeless people all over the world. So that's the reality. We got refugees living in tents and tent cities all over the country, all over the world. But go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, getting back to the character of the candidates, they are traditionally Democrat.
You're breaking up, Reverend Type.
We can't hear you. And real nice. And they have been real nice. I know I broke up at that time. Someone called me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Someone called me. It interrupted my phone. I'm just going to say, we got our people to be much more aggressive. And they don't want to bring up, if she goes that way, she's a mad black woman. A mad black woman. They love to label us. Running for office as an African-American is a difficult thing. In my past, I have been asked several times, would I run for something? I have said no, absolutely no, because it's real difficult. People have different expectations on you than they do the other candidate. They would call her a mad black woman or this and that, as nice as she has been. But, it's all part of the process, Dr. Bra, and we're never going to change that process until we really begin to let people show out. Our power is in how we spend our money, and our power is in our ability to vote. if they know that there's a group over there that's voting 90% of the time and will come on you and will challenge you and will hold you accountable, then they're going to do more that we need them to do. Do you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, we're going to go around again, see if there's any questions yet. We're going to start again with Linda, Ms. Shorter. Ms. Shorter, do you have any questions?
No, I do not have any questions still at this time. I'm just still loving this. But no, I have no questions.
Okay. Dr. Shabazz, do you have any questions?
I have questions, but I definitely have comments. So I want the pastor to know I appreciate, again, the passion and your message and what you're communicating and delivering. And thank you for recognizing all that it takes in terms of stepping up and being a leader and what that means on us and in the community.
Ryan, you stop calling me.
Thank you for your time. Oh. And I look forward to continue the message that you're delivering.
I'm in Ryan.
We hear you, Linda. We hear your phone. Linda, go ahead, Mr. Bob.
Again, just like I was saying, just appreciate your time and the passion of what you're communicating as we're out in the communities, in our circles, some of the messages and some of the work that we are to continue doing. You know, you're preaching to the choir. So thank you again for your time and just all that you're putting into this program here. So thank you again.
All right. Brother Mashinda. You're on mute, Mashinda. All right, we'll come back to you. Good doctor, any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. Like I said, I'm not really into politics. And I just started voting when Obama ran. My question is, every year I hear this, we have to go and, you know, making everybody fear and scared. What will happen if all Republicans took office? What's the worst? What will happen? That's what I want to know. And the other question, what will happen if all Democrats take office? I mean, everything is so scary. What will happen? No one's told me what will happen. I don't understand what will happen. You know, I'm pretty sure some laws are going to change, but just tell me exactly what you predict will happen if, like I said, if it's a Trump-run world, what exactly will happen?
Well, the policies that would benefit, say, the poor and the needy, things like educational loans and grants and housing policies in the departments of trying, you know, they was Republicans. They take from the poor and give to the rich. There will be a lot of tax reduction, and with tax reduction come of the poor comes reductions. Programs that affect the masses of people, of poor and black people. So you will see this shift going on. And then for those that it's important to, they would institute a ban on all types of women's services and going to affecting those who would have abortions, a ban on abortions, a national ban on abortions and things like that. That would happen. Biden, the next 2 years, we would see nothing happening because they would bottle him up to make sure that nothing he proposes, because everything that they proposed, he wouldn't sign it, okay? And so you will have this bottleneck of there will be no services. And then 2 years later, I project that if that happens, Biden would be so it would be such a negative effect on him that when he ran again, he would probably not get elected. You know, these things happen in cycles, my brother. And it's just important for us to understand that money going to all the things that are important to us, they won't be there. We've seen this before, my brother. We've seen this, the cutting of something as valuable as children's programs, you know, things like that, gone. Democrats like big government because it affects more people and helps more people, while at the same time, Republicans like a small government so that all their friends can benefit from the tax and they get richer. So you have the increasing of this gap again, where there'll be a bigger gap between the rich and the poor. That's what will happen.
Okay.
This is what I see. Kind of like you said, Republicans take office, none of us get nothing. Democrats take office, everybody gets something except us. So we're losing on both ends, man. Because Democrats get in, they're going to be hooking up all the immigrants, and we're not going to get nothing. Republicans gets in, nobody gets nothing but the rich. So that's my issue there. That's what I see, man.
Brother, I just watched three members of my congregation file for to have their educational loans excused, whatever, you know. And it's taking a lot of pressure. It's going to take a lot of pressure off of them as Americans, and they've already signed the application, just waiting for it to go through the federal courts and them to work that out. That's a benefit for Black folks, man. Okay, that's a benefit for Black children who don't have to have. I wish they had done it to me. I finished paying off my loans for divinity school 10 years ago, but it took me 20 years. No, bro, you got to understand what the policies. That's why I say don't look at the movement, the policies. We're benefiting a lot from this. All that PPE money that they stole, but how about the individuals of those Black folks that just got those tax rebates, those rebates on that? Those are Black folks too. Now, not everything, you know, I'm not, you know, not everything, you know, there's some things, but no. Mm-mm.
Brother Reverend Smart, also, yes. and good doctor, that's a great question. I mean, it was an excellent question. Appreciate it. But also, if the Republicans take over the House, the Senate, they already got the Supreme Court. That set the basis for them to get the presidency in the 2024. But all the investigation that's going on with January 6th, and other investigations will go away that the Democrats are dealing with. Second, they're saying this right now, they're going to impeach Biden, nullifying the popular vote that unseated Trump, even though he got 77 million votes. Biden got 90 million. That would be gone. It would be minority rule again. You understand? Trump then lost every popular vote. Bush lost the popular vote. If it went for the Supreme Court, he wouldn't have gotten into office. So it would go back to minority rule. Second, They're going to get rid of Social Security or cut it back so drastically, because they would rather cut poor people program and use that money to run the government than to be tax rich people to build up money to run the government. The other thing they would do is they're a party of revenge. They already said they're going to put people like Maxine Waters, Barbara Lee, the sister out of Texas, Sheila, all of them going to be investigated. They already saying that by Congress, bringing them up on charges. And if they get control of the Senate and Congress, they're going to impeach them. They already calling this. And when it comes to immigration is caused by the exploitation by major corporations of the countries that make it such a problem for people to eat in other countries, even border countries, the United States. They make them want to come here. And they say they're against immigration, but all over Trump golf courses, he's in there. Immigrants that are not went through the right process. Schwarzenegger gave a one a baby. He was the governor. The Latino worker had his baby. Nancy Pelosi had immigrants working for her until it was exposed. They talk that stuff, but you need an immigration policy. And this is where I'm mind by Riven Smart and BCCLA and the national movement is the whole Democratic Party accountable for what they'll do, and that is tax the rich more than 15% of their expand Social Security, expand Medicare. They would deal with student loans, they'll wipe them off. They'll deal with the federal suppression of votes, get rid of that postmaster who got rid of mail-in votes. One reason, it's just so much that's to our benefit if the Democrats can hold on to the Senate and hold on to the Congress. But if these wild people, mega people, they're not Republican, they're mega, they're Trump people, who's not just a candidate, but he's a cult leader. He got people believing in QAnon. He got people believing in wild conspiracy that he's not lying to their face. And it's not just him. It's the people that follow him and enable him.
Yes, sir.
So those are the issues.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Dr. Ra, I just said it's past 7 and they let me stay till 7. I really appreciate you so much and your panelists so much. And I would love to be on when I have before my screen and just can talk.
We'll have you back. We'll have you to come back after right. The election.
Give an analysis.
It's going to be a struggle.
Okay. God bless you all.
All right, then.
Thank you.
Brother Roger Key, you have any issues? I can finish this up.
No, I'm just listening, Professor Rock.
All right, Brother Joe, you have any questions about politics issues before we close out?
I don't suffer from illusion of inclusion. You know, my
politics. When you say that, tell us what you mean by that.
It's illusion. You know, we go through all this and we think we're getting this and that and we don't get jacked. We get screwed, whoever's in there. You know, but I know that, you know, the Democrats do a lot for poor people and whatnot. But at the same time, these Democrats are sending billions of dollars over to Ukraine and all this other stuff. But whenever it's an issue with us, they don't send no money. So, you know, it's games. And I want to end this by using the words of my brother Kaleem Akil, when it comes to politics, truth is just a word that rhymes with baby root. You know? Now, she done recused herself from voting in the affirmative action thing. Now, we ain't got enough Democrats in there in the first place. You gonna recuse yourself from voting on that? What's up with that? And I don't want to talk about the brother who was the big cheese a few years ago. I ain't gonna go there because I don't want people throwing tomatoes at me. But during his second term, there's plenty he could have did. He didn't have to worry about being reelected. You ain't gonna put nothing before, you know, to you know, for your people specifically. You're gonna do something for all these other groups. Why can't you put some legislation for that you that it don't require no Congress, just you signing? You know, why didn't that happen? So, you know, like I say, I'm gonna vote and I vote Democrat, although my finances probably favor more Republicans, but I ain't rich enough to be on their side either. But you know, it's a bunch of games, man, just like what's going on now. This what's this, the guy running against Bass? Now, who gonna invest $100 million in an election that don't even pay you barely over $100,000? Come on, man. They got stuff going on behind the scenes. They do all kind of stuff. And, you know, that's just the way it is. I don't like it. I think we need other issues we need to be focusing on, like with our kids and us to start to produce something as a people. I think we put too much time into the political arena. I'm more of the Booker T. Washington persuasion. We need skills. We need, you know, to own stuff. We, you know, so we can deal with each other. We don't even produce potato chip or a safety pin. You know what I'm saying? So that's just my take on politics. I don't deal with it. I know it's out there, but I vote, but I still ain't with it in my mind because there's other pressing issues that we need to be dealing with as people. So I'm gonna leave it at that.
All right, Sister Shabazz.
I'm glad, you know, it was, like I said, a passionate conversation, you know, but it is what it is. We got to do what we got to do. We got to be about our business. We got to be on the ground, taking care of what's real. And, you know, that's how that is.
Good. Appreciate you, Sister Shabazz. You get, that's a good analysis. Sister Linda, are you still there?
I'm still here. Yes.
Yeah, you have any comments, closing remarks?
No, my closing remarks is just, again, I just love what I heard. And I'm learning, and I'm going to actually study some more of what he was saying about Leah Lee, because I didn't realize. I mean, we do this having the same kind of issues, not to the extent that he was talking about here in Florida, but I will be reading that more tonight and researching more on what, because I loved it. And I thank him for even just bringing me up to breast. I appreciate it.
All right. And the good doctor, any comments?
Yeah, like I said, man, I was wanting to bring up a comment. I hope we can talk about it next time. But I was watching Dr. Claude Anderson when he said, you know, a few years ago, we officially became, and as of right now, we're officially the low class people, bottom class people, blacks. We became officially low on the totem pole for life till the changes come. But like I said, man, nothing's going to change because Democrats, Republicans, Democrats give us something. The people above us are going to go twice as higher, man. You know, we're always going to be bottom class people. Nothing's going to ever change. We get a little crumbs here and everybody will be happy, I guess. But I don't see nothing, man. As long as we're fighting for resources, nothing's going to change, man. It's like, I'm like with Brother Hembrick. We got to develop our own resources, man. As long as we depend on their resources, nothing's going to ever change, man. And like I said, give me 1 year. Like I said, I'm not into politics and voting. Was there ever a year where Democrats came in and black people moved up, you know, increased their positions 50% over others? I don't know any time in history, because every year, I believe, man, we're always, you know, this is critical to vote thing. Because we're going to lose something, and every year we're fighting for something, and we're at the bottom. You know, so I don't see any changes ever coming. You know, I just voted my stuff. I don't know, my little ballot I voted yes on everything, all those little things, you know, and I voted half Republican people and half Democrats. I mean, when it came to the governor, I saw that governor debate. This guy, he's going up against. This guy was not that articulate, man. I mean, this guy, I always vote Green Party. I never vote for Democrat Republic, but there was nobody green on this ballot, man. But nothing's going to change, man. You know, you got to create your own resources. You can't depend on the government. I'm like Brother Hembrick, man. You got to do for yourself, man. Like, know thyself. And I just saw someone else who was saying that. You know, like I said earlier, off air, when they did this bank thing to Kanye, shutting down a bank and saying your money is not welcome, that took me to another woke level. And they can just shut down your bank, man. Like I said, you fight and get reparations. What if they pass a law and the bank said they don't want to accept your check? You know, man, we're in a bad situation, man. And Democrats and Republicans can't solve this. We can only solve this ourselves, man. So once we're depending on them to solve it, it's never going to change.
Okay. Brother Roski?
Yeah. You know, I sit and do mathematics all day and every day. And I try to think as logical as possible. And as far as I could see, and it may be short, the position that blacks are in is pretty clear to me. It's because if you are targeted, and if you are the main target, because there's something about you that's more extraordinary than any other when you break down people into ethnic categories. There's got to be something about you where the target is you all the time, even when you're peaceful. So looking at that, that just lets me know that if we ever, because Ross say nothing going to change, brother doctor, you say nothing's going to change. Well, that's why you have to change. We as African Americans or Africans, period, whatever we're doing, we need to change it. And then I think the light will start to shine a little bit brighter and it will continue to. And this is why we come on this show weekly and do what we're doing. We're targeted because there's something about us that's more powerful than any other ethnic race. If they got to keep trying to put us down. So we need to just work on us. And I think things will change. Really will change. So that's why we do what we do. And we got to get more people like us. And hopefully people are going to start gravitating to something that makes sense versus something that don't. All right, Professor Ra.
Yeah, well, you know, I believe in struggle, as y'all know. And when Frederick Douglass said, without struggle, there's no progress. I have seen change. I've seen positive change by many African people. We have more millionaires than we've ever had as African people. Second, at one time, we couldn't vote, and now we can. That's a change. As far as economic, during the war on poverty, it started in 1965. And then after that, they've had Teen Post, they had Manpower Development Program, they had anti-poverty programs. Even the program that we had on last Wednesday, about Job Corps was an anti-poverty program. And it created a black middle income. And many of them moved out the community. I mean, they was working as director of Head Start, director of Manpower Development, Watch Labor Community Action, had jobs for young people. And I see change, and I'm hopeful for change. I see organizations fighting for us. It took us 100 years to get out of slavery. I know we want things right now. You know, just like you, when you go through the fast food place, you know, but it don't go that way. It's a long, protracted struggle. Well, Martin Luther King said, I may not get there, you know, with you, but I will get to the promised land. Because he recognized it was a struggle. Man was assassinated. His house was bombed 5 times. He was criminalized, put in prison for us to live a better life. I just feel that I have an obligation personally to not just let it happen and hope nothing happened that I regret, but to fight against it. The Panther Party said in 1968, we have to fight within the system. Malcolm said in 1965, we have to fight on all fronts. That's inward and out. In the system and outward. I'm for black businesses. We had black businesses. We used to have a black enterprise. We used to list the top 100 black businesses. There's a business in Compton. It's one of the top millionaire businesses. A brewing company right on Santa Fe and Artesia across the street. Nobody knew that was a black man running that. He was the owner. Brewing income, I can't remember it right now. There are many black people that are doing, you know, LeBron James, you know, opening up a school. Many young people have opportunity to get education. With Deion Jackson, with Deion, the football player, Sanders is doing for Jackson State, undefeated. Bringing national recognition. At one time, Joe Emmerich could tell you the story that when there was segregation, Grambling had more pro football players getting drafted from their school than any of the other schools. Now they opened it up so that black people can play for all the white schools. As I conclude, I taught a course called Exploitation of Black Athletes. I get athletes to be exploited. The top 4 rated football colleges may be Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and some other one. They are all from red states, white states, mega states. They won't even let the football player mamas them vote fairly. But they love to go and watch them run up and down the field like a lawnmower and knock the hell out of each other for their entertainment in an arena like a gladiator. And you know, and don't care nothing about the ones that get hurt. Oh, yeah, it's change. It's change. And we got to keep on pushing, as Curtis Mayfield say. We can't stop now. Move up a little higher, some way, somehow. So I want to thank all y'all for being on. And you're entitled to your views. I love your views. I love your analysis. That's what makes, as Rashidi said, this program beautiful. We have diverse views. But the struggle continues. As we used to say, and Linda, and I'm pretty sure Dr. Shabazz know, a lotta continua, meaning the struggle continues.
That's right.
All right. So we got to continue. Not for us, but for the future black people. Even if they don't even participate. All right, Roger Teeks, what's happening Wednesday?
Here we go. Now, we got Dr. B coming on. We Dr. B is Dr. Mike. So what I'm going to do is on Wednesday, I'm going to introduce him as Dr. Mike. B represents his last name, but we had a doctor, another doctor, B. And so Dr. B is Dr. Mike. He's coming on, and we're going to be talking about canceling Kanye, obedient outrage in the Black community. So that should be very interesting, because you have a lot of people on both sides of the fence when it comes to Kanye West. So we're going to be talking about him. And so that should be interesting. All right, folks. So that's it, Professor Ra.
Yeah, I'm going to try to get somebody from Black Lives Matter on Monday.
Okay, that's the day before voting, right? The final voting day.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right, so Conscious Corner and Each One Teach One. Everybody have a great evening.
Peace.